Okay, welcome to Crypto Blockchain Podcast, the week of October 20th. We're with Audrey Nesbitt, and she's here to talk about the developments in blockchain last week. How are things, Audrey?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm good. I'm excellent. So you've been doing a lot of work in crypto and blockchain, right?
Right, and a lot has come up recently. Well, not recently. It's been a hot topic the last year, if not a little longer, about a non-fungible token. Mm-hmm. So maybe you can just do a really brief on what is a non-fungible token.
Sure. So non-fungible tokens are basically the ERC 721 standard, the Ethereum Request for Comments 721 standard, and it's basically based on the idea that all tokens aren't created equal. Some tokens have intrinsic value based on their specific properties and cryptographic signatures, and therefore you can't just exchange one token for the other. You can collect them and earn rewards or points based on the specific characteristics of those tokens. And one of the examples is the CryptoKitties game, which has been getting quite a lot of attention. I'm sure you've heard of CryptoKitties, right?
Oh yeah. What I like that kind of what how we have to do the difference between fungible and non-fungible is, to me, non-fungible is kind of like possession doesn't necessarily mean you own it. So it's like if I go pay a dollar and that dollar goes into circulation, nobody can come back and make a claim on that dollar. So something that's non-fungible, even if you bought it, if you did not do your due diligence, somebody can come in and go, yeah, you don't own it.
Talk about non-fungible more as like a painting that you bought, which if it's a Michelangelo and someone else came along and said, let me trade that Michelangelo for a Da Vinci, then you couldn't just exchange it for a Da Vinci unless you paid the difference in prices between a Michelangelo and Da Vinci, right? So,
well, you could actually, if it was both owners who both, you know, honestly owned those paintings and they decided to make the swap, they could make the swap. But if one of the owners of the painting didn't actually own the painting, maybe it was stolen, it could have been Nazi, you know, loot, whatever. So that's kind of how I look at it. You don't necessarily, it's like a house, right? You hire a lawyer to make sure the deed is clear. So if you buy a house and you don't do your due diligence, you know, somebody can knock on your door and say, yeah, you don't own it. You didn't do the proper, you can't just flip it like you said. So we're kind of saying the same thing, I think.
Right. So yeah, I mean, I definitely think of them as collectibles, and I think of non-fungible tokens as being very unique pieces.
Unique.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
So how do you find NFTs are helping solve certain issues in the blockchain crypto world?
Right. So most people, if you think about, you know, the real world, they want unique things, right? So if you're buying a house or you're buying a car, you don't want the same house or the same car as just everyone else on the block, right? Your house should be somewhat unique, somewhat different, should have a nice garden or yard or whatever, and then the windows might be a certain way, right? And similar to that, you don't want the same color car as just what everyone else on your block. So the uniqueness makes it so that the item that you own has characteristics that are very indicative of your personality and your likes and tastes, and also they project a certain something. Maybe they help you make a personal statement about your personality, right?
So do you think non-fungible tokens have a use case, for example, for enterprise scenarios such as software and media licensing?
Absolutely. In fact, that's one of the use cases of NFTs. And in fact, the reason that that's really important is most media that's created today is essentially packaged, run-of-the-mill, cookie-cutter kind of media, where you have like a song which is just a beat, which is maybe the same beat that's sampled 1,000 times, and therefore the value of that piece of music has not the same value as something like a symphony orchestra, where there's like 1,000 musicians that have come together to contribute, and they're each instrument is contributing to this larger symphony. So when you're talking about fungible and non-fungibility, the uniqueness only comes in when you're not doing something that's a factory made unique item, whereas a non-fungible, piece of music could be like you brought together 1,000 musicians with their specific instruments, and they created a symphony out of that, and then you encoded their talents and contributions into that non-fungible token, so that they all get paid when that symphony is sold on your platform, right? Because these musicians deserve to be paid adequately.
Right, so it helps protect. It's copyright of some sort, and it kind of helps protect artists and their creations.
Absolutely, and it's taking that level of ownership and protection and rights management to a whole new level, because now you want to reward even the smallest contributions towards a movie or a musical piece, and have that artist be rewarded so that they can produce more interesting pieces.
Correct. Right. People know that in blockchain and cryptocurrency that the SEC is a major factor of how we structure most of our projects, especially when we need to raise money. So you mentioned non-fungible tokens would be great for, paintings as an example.
Correct.
So do you think that the SEC should regulate like a token if a painting was on, a non-fungible token?
Yeah, so I'm mostly a cypherpunk, so I hate authority, and I try to reject the authority of governments and institutions and so on and so forth. Yeah.
Do you think, however, that the regulation that the SEC has been bringing in has been helpful?
I actually completely. So, Elon Musk had made a tweet that he basically said, the SEC stands for Short Seller Enrichment Committee. So he's right. I mean, the SEC's regulations are completely enriching day traders and short sellers, people who are basically in the system to crash the system, right? So when Goldman Sachs or one of the big investment banks shorts the same company that they're selling the assets of, they're literally shorting the financial system by saying, hey, I'm making it so that the housing market crashes, right? And the SEC is down there, helping them do that. So I guess I let my views be known. But I reject those kinds of regulations which are like counter poor people and enrich the top 0.1%, right? Those are regulations designed to help the 0.1% make more money, and that's the reason our financial system is the way it is, where it's like five companies own 99% of the wealth, right?
Now, is this because for the most part, any project that goes after U.S. investors has to be regulated, and therefore only accredited investors can invest in the United States?
Right.
Is that why you think it's geared to the rich?
Right, it's absolutely geared towards the rich. If you and me don't have $10 million in the bank, we aren't considered accredited investors. We can't even make any financial decisions that the top 1% can make. So accredited investors get to do those things and, save on taxes, essentially file a fraction of the taxes that we pay. So it's not fair on anyone besides, enriching the top 1%. Yeah.
Okay. you don't think it protects some people from scam ICOs?
The scams are, you know, designed to be scammed because they target people who may not have the education or the cognitive bandwidth to research, to do the research, right? So for someone who's not had, you know, a master's degree or some ability to differentiate between a website which has, you know, some legitimate security and credentials associated with that versus a website which is just created to scam someone, I think that does raise some legitimate questions about how those aspects should be tackled. But the SEC has done nothing to prevent scams from happening. You know, the scams have happened regardless of SEC regulations, you know, which have, yeah. So I don't think the SEC's regulations or more stringent regulations is going to actually help prevent more scams. I think the thing that's going to help prevent scams is giving people access to education and giving people access to cognitive bandwidth that's going to help them make better decisions as adults, right?
Okay. Now, do you think, is there any benefit for non-fungible tokens, ERC 721 standard tokens like CryptoKitties, to help poorer parts of the world, such as in Africa?
Absolutely. So I think the fair distribution of financial access and the ability to make good financial choices is the outcome that we all want, and even the poorest parts of the world should have access to financial services, right? So having the ability to invest in crypto assets that are going to appreciate, or at least have the potential to appreciate in value, gives the poorest people in the world an ability to make financial choices and have that ability to plan their future in a way that empowers them. So definitely crypto assets in general and non-fungible tokens in specifically have that quality about them.
Well, I have heard some people say that non-fungible tokens could help lower transaction costs on the blockchain. Why would a non-fungible token over a regular token, how would one contribute as opposed to the other, so to speak?
Yeah, so there's actually a few different mechanisms, some of which are still in the research and development phase, and some of which have been proven. And I'm not going to get too technical, but basically there's this thing called the Lightning Network, which is Bitcoin Lightning Network. And Lightning Network obviously takes some of your transactions that are between two parties and moves them to a side chain or Lightning Network chain.
Okay.
And so that enables you to transact with a third party without burdening the main net.
The main net, yeah.
And so what non-fungible tokens can do in that scenario is that you can now make investment choices on the side chain, right? So as a individual investor, what I would like is for me to have the ability, or for any poor person to have the ability, to invest in value which either accrues value over time or at least maintains its value. So like, for instance, maybe a few centuries or decades ago, someone could invest in gold because it was still affordable at the time. And they could be like, oh, gold is always going to appreciate in value over time. And by having this gold in my locker, I'm at least investing in my kids' future, right? So maybe when my kids are old enough to go to college, they can cash in that gold and pay for their college education. That choice doesn't exist anymore for most average people. And so when you have a non-fungible token, which is almost certain to appreciate in value over time, on the side chain, that's a investment option that regular folks now will have. And I'm not saying that it directly impacts the transaction speeds or improves them, but it does offer some solutions for what are legitimate problems in the ecosystem.
So I don't know if I told you that, so I'm about to release a security token, an STO. We hope to go live in November. Mm-hmm. And we both know that we're in a bear market right now. So there's a big shakeout, and ICOs or STOs, they're not all doing that well. And I'm hoping, because this is an American company based in the United States, and will be various waivers, Reg S, Reg D, et cetera, et cetera. Do you still think there's a lot of opportunity out there because the market has decided?
I absolutely do. I think that the market is going to come back, and I think we're in the end of the bear run. I think it's all the way up from here. And in fact, there are signs of that happening, because all the major Wall Street, or not all of them, but many major Wall Street banks have started investing in blockchain, and some of them even in crypto, such as Fidelity. So those are signs that crypto is now gaining mainstream acceptance, and that also the transaction scalability issues have been kind of solved, because the Lightning Network, the Liquid Network also, and obviously Ethereum 2.0 is coming down the line. So those problems will get solved, and in fact, I expect that STOs is part of the equation. STOs are going to be the next big thing for sure. And I think from now to the foreseeable future, I think security token offerings is going to be the default rather than ICOs.
Right. And I'm kind of, what I think is kind of, I don't want to say it's great, but I think the shakeout and it is good, and that a lot of crappy projects are just going to fall to the wayside. I think people are getting pickier. They're doing more research. I think the community is getting more vocal when they see a garbage project. Though I'm amazed at some projects that I know are garbage. You know, not, and that's heartbreaking. So for me, the plus side is a lot of those projects are going away, and some really fantastic ones are coming up through the mix, and that is really exciting for me.
Right. The way I see it is that, you know, every project can start off as a medium, you know, quality project, but once you know that the team has the right intentions, then you know that over time the quality will improve, because they'll get some seed capital in place, and then they'll work towards that level of quality that, you know, so I wouldn't outright, you know, reject all the wannabe ICOs, STOs. So I would just say that, you know, you have to give some of them time to improve their quality levels and essentially become viable, right?
Right. Now, is there anything specific you're looking forward to? Is there a project coming down? Is there a specific project, or is it more a direction of development? Like, what are you, is there something specific you're looking forward to seeing come to fruition?
So being a developer, I'm mostly interested in the development aspects and the fact that there's Ethereum 2.0 that's coming in 2019, and I'm already preparing for that, because I'm on the testnet on Robson and Brinkerby, and I'm already trying out some of those APIs. And at ETH San Francisco a few weeks back, Vitalik has done a panel discussion, and he's already outlined that most of the technical problems related to Ethereum 2.0 have been solved. So I'm really optimistic about the future, and in fact, Hyperledger is another thing I'm looking at it from mostly blockchain consortium point of view. But I would say Ethereum 2.0 is going to be really exciting for sure.
Yeah, there's a few projects that I'm also looking forward to. And what about events? Where are you going to be end of the year, next year? Any event that you are specifically going to aim to get to?
So I try not to attend events. I'm more of a...
All right, what?
my goal is to write more code and ship more code than to network with obviously I do meet interesting people all the time, and it's nice to obviously meet new people, but my priority is to ship code. So I'm going to continue doing that. But I heard you're headed to some events this year.
Yeah, I'm New York next week, and that's to get the final work done on the for a POS development company in the US called Cryptune. They have announced a partnership with Coin Payments, so they already are in the manufacturing business of point of sale systems, and they have some new developments coming out, and they're integrating coin payments, and down the road they hope to develop a reward token that will just be given away. It'll be part of the ecosystem, so it's not something they're going to do an ICO on. It's going to be, you know, like you go to Starbucks, you get points, so it'll be a similar thing. I was supposed to go to Malta, and that is in holding depending on how much work we get done next week, because so, it's right after. And with CryptoChicks, we're working on, we're going to do an event with Boomo in Toronto in November, a couple weeks, so I'm looking forward to that. And we're working on a hackathon for Pakistan.
Nice.
So we're having some challenges with it, and obviously the needs of the girls are different than the needs of, you know, the girls in North America. A lot of the girls don't have access or don't have their own computers, so we're hoping we can find somebody, you know, instead of, say, donating a cash prize like we had for New York, maybe laptops or iPads, whatever. So we're trying to change, you know, our approach a little bit, just because of the different challenges and the different goals of those involved. And we're looking forward to, in the spring, we have to figure out a date in Toronto. We are going to do a blockchain gaming hackathon.
Nice.
So we are in the process. Yes, and we might have some exciting news about a featured speaker. And that's not finalized yet, so we know that if this person can speak, it'll be, you know, it'll be an in-demand affair. So I'm already looking forward to 2019. That's a fantastic thing, Dad.
That's
a fantastic
awesome
thing. It's awesome.
Yeah,
it's awesome.
Well, we're all optimistic about this ecosystem, so I think we should just keep working and building and shipping products, and I think we're going to do great things in the future.
I agree with you, and if there's more people like you in the space, then it'll be an incredible thing, because I know your heart is all about helping poor nations and bringing it's all through your podcast today about how do we equalize. You know, how do we disequal, and how do we get money to the people that need it, and how do we benefit them and make it fair for them? And I think that is just fantastic.
Absolutely. I mean, I agree with you. That's fantastic. Let's close out for this edition, and obviously we have lots more to discuss in the future, so hope you'll come back in the future too.
Absolutely.
Awesome. So thanks, guys. See you next week. Bye.